whatnots, knickknacks, tchotchka, trifles, bric-a-brac. You know, keepsakes. My Aunt Mendel had hundreds of them. In the cobwebby darkness above the bathroom door, starting down from the headboard of the bed with those unblinking eyes and wide painted smiles, marching along the hallway shelves, looking like pale dusty dancers twisting in the moonlight. At 10 years old, they fascinated me. Why would anyone bother having toys that they never played with, that just sat around gathering dust? What was the point of all these little ceramic people? I remember the day that my curiosity turned to fear. I was alone in Aunt Mendel's upstairs hallway. The laughter and light conversation of the adults drifted up from the staircase, my eyes fixed on a set of mugs in front of me. Each mug was shaped like a face, a grinning English gentleman, a drunk sailor, a winking lady. Aunt Mendel was very strict about her privacy and her possessions. She'd probably be furious if she knew I was exploring the house by myself, and I might not ever have another chance to get a closer look at these weird old things with their soulless eyes and fixed expressions. I reached out my hand for the sailor. As I did, the pupils of the painted eyes shifted. They were looking right at me. To my shock and horror, the mug's face began to change. The rosy cheeks stretched, becoming gaunt and starved. The bright eyes shrank and retreated into bruised, hollow sockets. The jaw dropped from the smiling mouth, which opened into a toothless pit. It was like it was screaming. I screamed at myself, then fell backwards in my hurry to escape. I scrambled to my feet and ran straight into Aunt Mendel. "What are you doing up here?" she asked coldly. Talking to Aunt Mendel was always like an interrogation. I grunted with fright, pointing up to a perfectly ordinary porcelain mug. I blinked. There's no way I just imagined all that, right? "Be good for your Aunt Mendel, honey," I heard my grandfather shout up the stairs. Of course, my parents' yearly anniversary getaway, the one where I was got left with some relative for a few days. This was the first time I was staying over with Aunt Mendel. They must have had no other options, I thought. The thought that I'd be sleeping with all these eerie figurines around made my stomach churn. Like most 10-year-olds, I hated being compared to other kids, but I had a sudden urge to grab my mother's skirt and beg not to be left alone with my creepy old aunt in her creepy old home. I was still trying to think of a way to convince my parents when I heard their car start outside. Panicking, I ran past the rows of staring trinkets and out into the driveway. But it was already too late. They were gone. Behind me, I saw the dark shape of Aunt Mendel on the porch, her hands crossed behind her back, waiting. Aunt Mendel had always been a mystery to me. She was my mother's older sister, yet she looked younger than any of her siblings. Even so, with her glacial blue eyes, pale blonde bun of hair, and square jaw, intense or calculating would describe her better than youthful. When she spoke, people in my family did as they were told. Even my father, who had his own business and didn't take crap from anyone. On the rare occasions Aunt Mendel showed up for the holidays, she sat at the head of the table, slept in the best bedroom, and scheduled our activities with the cold precision of a train timetable. When she showed up, conversations got quieter, like even the adults were afraid to speak out of turn. But no one ever talked about it. Thanks to Aunt Mendel, I first experienced the unsettling realization there were people out there who my parents were afraid of, and some of them were in my own family. Slouching my shoulders, I followed Aunt Mendel back into the house. She opened the door, seemingly at random, and pointed inside. "This will be your room." Before me, I saw a cot that looked about as soft as a rock, a giant antique metal fan, and wall-to-wall knick-knacks. Aunt Mendel looked me over sternly, ignoring my crestfallen expression. "Dinner is at 7 sharp. Do not touch anything except what you brought with you." Without another word, she turned on her heel and marched back down the hallway. I sighed, lay down on a slab-like cot, then took out a chapter book and started to read. As hard as I tried to distract myself with the adventures of the Magic Treehouse Kids, I just couldn't relax. Armando's house had the stillness and silence of a predator readying its leap. Every time I looked up at the embroidery, statuettes, and other keepsakes, I felt sure they'd shifted somehow. And the more I noticed, the more intense the changes became. The strings from a piece of needlework rewove themselves into a string of numbers. 1-3-8-5-7-6, 1-3-8-5-7-7, 0-2-9-0-7-8, 1-5-5-6-2-6, 1-5-5-6-2-8, 1-5-5-6-2-9. There were hundreds of them. I finally tore my eyes away to focus on a series of paintings, the sort of phony 19th century kind that usually showed a hunter stomping around with his hounds, a peaceful fall scene. There was nothing peaceful about the image before me. The background had become black smoke, a burning pit, and searchlights lit the scene. The hunter's clothing was black too, except for a red armband with a symbol on it that I was sure I'd seen on TV before. His hounds had become German shepherds, and instead of a fox, he pointed his rifle at a wall of emaciated people in pajamas. 10-year-old me had no idea what to make of this, but the gruesome details were becoming more and more realistic with each passing moment. If I leaned in close, I could even smell the ashes and hear a shrieking siren. Shuddering, I fled. Outside, I found an old soccer ball that some neighborhood kids must have lost in Aunt Mendel's overgrown garden. I kicked it around a bit, mostly just to try to forget what I had seen. I wondered where Aunt Mendel was. I wondered how she could live in that house. She didn't seem to care about or even notice any of the strange goings on. It made me think that maybe even ghosts were afraid of Aunt Mendel. I managed to kill time until the sunset, and a distant clock tolled 7 p.m. Aunt Mendel was already placing a lone plate on the kitchen table. "Your dinner," she stated. "Clean up when you're finished." Maybe Aunt Mendel just wasn't hungry, I figured. Truth was, I wasn't exactly excited about boiled cabbage and potatoes either, but that was my only option. Aunt Mendel watched me eat for a moment, a knowing smirk on her face. She seemed to enjoy my struggle with the boiled vegetables. Then she was gone again. Alone again, I forced down as much of my food as I could, cleaned up, and took out my drawing supplies, doing my best not even to look at anything except the paper in front of me. There was no sound except the ticking of clocks. "Bedtime," Aunt Mendel said from behind me. I flinched. Where had she come from? It was only 9 p.m. But I was so bored and on edge that I followed without any complaints. "This will be your last chance to use the bathroom until morning," Aunt Mendel informed me. A keyring glittered in her hand. She was going to lock me in. "Your parents will be so disappointed if you got yourself hurt during the night," Aunt Mendel mused by way of explanation. Then she shut the door and twisted the key. I lay on the hard cot with my eyes open. Aunt Mendel's words had sounded like a threat. One way or another, I was locked in here with those things. Something clattered behind me. I spun. A group of figurines had fallen to the floor beside the bed. In the moonlight, they looked like a pile of gaunt, starved corpses. I imagined them starting to move, rushing me, swarming up the blankets. Something was moving in the painting on the wall. The hunter and his dogs had completely disappeared. In their place was a nighttime forest clearing lit by firelight, hung with banners bearing the same weird symbol from earlier. A boy my age lay on an ancient slab of stone, with five hooded figures surrounding him. The pale light glittered on their armbands and their daggers. When I looked back to the figurines, they were at the edge of the bed, in a row like marching soldiers. Pointed porcelain teeth glimmered inside their tiny mouths, and each face wore a vicious, bloodthirsty expression. That was it then. Those things moved when I wasn't looking. I just had to keep my eyes on them, I thought. I sat up in the cot with my heart pounding, trying not to even blink. If I fell asleep... I was still in a sitting position when I woke with my head on my chest, drooling. Morning sunlight streamed through the window. My sleep had been restless, and I felt more drained than rested. As I ate the rye bread and water Aunt Mendel provided for breakfast, I noticed two tiny puncture marks on my right wrist. I spent the day outside again, as far as I could get from the animated keepsakes and grotesque art. Apart from butterflies, beetles, passing cars, and Aunt Mandel's shadow in the window watching me, I didn't see anyone all day. Boiled potatoes and cabbage were back on the table at 7 sharp, and while I ate and tried to ignore the words on the Live Laugh Love sign shaping themselves into words I didn't understand. As before, Aunt Mandel locked me in my room. This time though, I didn't dare look around. Like a scared animal, I burrowed deep into my smelly wooden blanket, only leaving a tiny hole near my head to breathe and peer out of. If I pretended to sleep, I hoped sleep would come. Sleep, and nothing else. I was just dozing off when I heard, or thought I heard, a key turning in the door lock. Someone or something was trying very hard to slip silently into my room. Through my hole in the blanket, I glimpsed the dark shape crawling toward me on the rug. I shut my eyes tight and pretended to sleep. Seconds later, I felt the stickiness of saliva on my forearm, and a sharp puncture. It was like my life was leeching out through my arm. Although I tried to keep quiet and still, the shock of it made me yelp. The figure paused, then retreated, crawling backwards out the door on all fours with freakish speed. I didn't dare move or open my eyes. But when I did, I saw Aunt Mandel's keyring on the floor, shining in the moonlight. Dizzy from blood loss, I staggered from the cot and grabbed the keys. I looked at it curiously for only a moment before slipping them into my pajama shirt and collapsing into a deep but troubled sleep. The next morning, I awoke to the sound of Aunt Mandel storming around the house, opening drawers and slamming cabinets. "Where are my keys?" she demanded. "If you've taken them..." I shook my head vigorously. It was true, after all. I hadn't taken them. It was more like they'd been left in my room. The metal was so cold, it seemed to burn against the skin of my chest. "I'm going to retrace my steps," Aunt Mandel warned, emphasizing each word slowly. "If you've stolen from me, I'm going to find out about it, and the consequences will be terrible." I shuddered, but I kept my mouth shut. Aunt Mandel turned on a heel and slammed the door. When I heard a car start, where else had she been last night? I knew that I was about to be left alone in the house of locked doors, but I had the keys. Soon, the silence was complete. I peered around the bedroom door. Nothing moved in the dusty light. I kept my eyes away from Aunt Mandel's knickknacks, not wanting to even imagine what they might be twisting themselves into now that she was gone. Instead, I unlocked one door after another, not even sure what I was searching for. There was an office-style room with a desk for paperwork, antique furniture, and a display of at least 50 antique postcards on the wall. I watched the pool of blood begin to spread across the lovely images of old-world European cities. The black shadows of planes moved across the spreading bloodstains. A crescendo of roaring engines rose from the endless squadron, so loud I thought for sure Aunt Mandel would somehow hear it. I quickly shut the door. I passed through rooms of covered furniture and old sports equipment, canning supplies, luggage, always with some grim scene playing out in the background. Soon, I closed the door to the final room, Aunt Mandel's bedroom, with nothing to show for my efforts. I sighed. How on earth was I supposed to make the keys reappear without getting caught? As I pondered, I heard a loud clack. All of the knickknacks in the hallways had turned or tilted to one side, from figures in the paintings to glass statuettes of dogs. They were all pointing to the doorless, dead end of the hallway. But there was nothing to see down there. Or was there? As I examined the wood paneling, I noticed a shallow, round indentation where no key would ever fit, but a keyring might. As expected, Aunt Mandel's keyring was a near-perfect match once I placed it right. A square door, just large enough for an adult to squeeze through, popped out from the wall in front of me with a click. It had been so smartly hidden by the carpentry that I'd walked by it countless times without noticing anything unusual about the wall. A cool, musty breeze hissed through the gaps around it. I twisted the keyring and pulled it open. On the other side, a stone staircase led down into the cellar that I never known existed. Like the door, it was a space designed for crawling, not walking. I snatched a dim flashlight from one of the spare rooms. Guided by its flickering, grimy beam, I moved on all fours into the cobwebby darkness. The tunnel was old, but not unused. There was no dust on the stone steps I crawled down on my hands and knees. Even so, it was so dark I nearly fell from the drop-off at the end of the stairs. It was only about 3 feet high, but that's a lot when you're 10 years old. I lowered myself down the slippery rock into the pentagonal chamber, wondering what on earth I'd gotten myself into. On each wall hung one of those red banners with a white circle and the funny X in the middle. In the center of the cellar floor was a big flat rock, like one from the painting, with weird symbols carved all around the edges. In a locked safe, that I now had the key to, I found black and white pictures of a much younger Art Mandel with a bunch of other people in uniforms, some yellow documents in that funny language the embroidery had turned itself into, and a dagger like the one from the painting. I had no idea what it all meant, but I knew I wasn't supposed to be looking at any of this stuff, especially when I dug deeper into the weird old reports and found the pictures of the skeleton-thin people and the stuff that was being done to them. I was horrified and disgusted, but I thought about something one of my teachers had said. If you see something bad or dangerous, you need to tell an adult about it. But who would believe me without proof? After hesitating, I scooped up one of the folders with the sickening photos and paperwork, then clambered out of that awful basement. I was panting by the time I crawled out of the hallway. I looked around at the knickknacks, art pieces, embroidery, and other junk lining Art Mandel's walls. I was starting to have a different idea about what was happening in this weird old house. Maybe whatever was messing with Art Mandel's trifles weren't trying to scare me or hurt me. Maybe it was trying to warn me. No sooner had the thought passed through my head when a shelf gave out beside me, causing figurines to shatter on the floor in front of me. The broken pieces formed a word. Run. If it hadn't been for that sudden shock, I wouldn't have looked up to see Art Mandel climbing, spider-like, along the ceiling, her head twisted around to glare at me. She hissed something in that strange language. I didn't need any further motivation to follow the shattered ceramic advice. As I barreled toward the light of the front door, I could hear shelves, display cases and clocks collapsing in Art Mandel's path, buying me time. I burst out into the bright sunlight, Art Mandel's papers still clutched tight in my hand. I looked desperately to my left and right. The streets on this stately, old-world style of town were all too quiet. I felt hot tears running down my cheeks. There was no one to help me. An engine rumbled. An antique car out for a Sunday drive was pulling up to the next intersection over. I charged toward it, waving my arms, papers flying everywhere. It was a miracle that the middle-aged driver was going slow enough to avoid hitting me. He stopped, and although I was too out of breath to explain, the pictures and my face said it all. As I climbed into the passenger seat, I twisted around to look behind me and saw Aunt Mandel's shadow slinking back into the house. Everything that happened after that was a blur. My parents came back from their vacation. The police walked right in the swinging front door of Aunt Mandel's empty house. They found the room that I described. It was through their investigation that I learned for the first time about the Holocaust, the Nazis, and their obsession with the occult. The investigators attributed my story to trauma and an overactive imagination, but they were at a loss to clarify anything about what happened. The best guess was that the person I'd called Aunt had been a mentally deranged child of Elfriede Mandel who immigrated illegally to the United States, despite her crimes, as part of Operation Paperclip. After all, how could Elfriede, born in 1913, still be alive to creep around on ceilings and feast on children's blood? In any case, there was no evidence of any crime. The woman I called Aunt Mandel had just vanished. Back at home, my mother explained to me in hushed tones about the aunt who'd helped her grandparents escape from the ruins of Germany, who had ruled the family with an iron fist for as long as anyone could remember, who barely aged, just becoming more sadistic and demanding with each passing year. Now that a secret was out, she disappeared. but to where. There's been no trace of my strange aunt since I fled from her house at 10 years old, 20 years ago today. And yet, I have a horrible feeling that one day, I'll turn a corner and see that familiar, stern, wide-jawed face and blonde bun barely aged a day, but looking very hungry.